Tonight is anniversary night.
Yay!
The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break, and then the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Cale.
Testing. Am I, you think it'll carry? Good evening. My name is Cale. I'm an alcoholic. What a lovely bunch of coconuts. Look at this group. Anybody here in their first 30 days? Welcome. Anybody in their last? You, I'm talking to. You're the guy. The rest of you can go. Okay. My sobriety day is January 20th, 1978. And by the grace of God and the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm still here. You know, I'd like to thank Stephanie for asking me to speak. I came in from the Berkshires where I live. And she seemed surprised that I would come in 2.5 hours. And I said, well, as far as I've been able to determine, the chapter about convenience is right next to the one that says, how are we doing? We'd like your feedback. I'm still looking for it in the book, and I've been unable to find it, but I was told years ago that Alcoholics Anonymous at least provides a sponsor for you so that you have one person to aim all your resentments at as opposed to spreading yourself too thin. Am I not doing it? Okay. That's all right. My word. You know, I on my 25th, I used to go to a Midtown meeting here, and on my 25th, I took a bunch of guys that I sponsor in New York to we went to different meetings that I got sober in here, and Midtown was gone. It was a ghost town. I couldn't believe it. So it's nice to see this place filled up. You know, it's got some good history for it. As a matter of fact, Mabel Diekman. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say. Well, anyway, Mabel's gone. Sorry, Mabel. Mabel Diekman, I came here. I was a month sober. I was going home. My dad was dying, and I was convinced that they were doing it all wrong, taking care of him. And I went to the first step meeting that was over in a little alcove, and she picks me up, and she drags me out there. She said, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm going home for the first time. My dad's in the hospital. All this stuff is going on. And she said, well, I need to learn how to let go. That was what I could think of after a month of sobriety. And she said, you need to be in an Al-Anon meeting. And she dragged me outside. She had this old Volkswagen Beetle parked right on Park Avenue. She stuck me in the car, drove me across town to St. Stephen's, and sat me down in a chair. And it changed my life. And that's how Alcoholics Anonymous works, okay? One alcoholic helping another. One person saying, I know how you feel. You know, now, what you're going to get is obviously my opinion based on my experience, which I think very highly of. after this long, it looks terribly arrogant, but what can I say? Call your sponsor now if it makes you upset, just to plan ahead. I went to that group, and it gave me the steps in a different way. But what it showed me was the power of one person reaching out to help another. And singleness of purpose. You know, when I moved out to L.A. the first time, I went to the Pacific group, and I walked in, and there at the time, I don't know whether it's the same, no facial hair, ties, everything, and I made it through. I mean, there was like 1,000 people at the meeting, and I made it through that meeting, and I never went back. Okay, just so you know where I'm coming from. The regimentation I got sober in New York, you know, and at the time anyway, it was, you know, loose. And what I got to see, though, is that a very dear friend and others went to the Pacific group because of the structure. They were unable to stay sober any other way. And over the course of time, I sound like the guy that I used to sit there and go, what a jerk. You know, I sound like the hardliner that I used to listen to and think, lighten up a little bit, you know. But the truth of the matter is that I have some very strong feelings based on my experience of practicing or not these steps. Now, I was firmly convinced for a while that the one way, at least, to get a perfect, unused copy of the Big Book was to talk to, ask for the book of anybody I sponsored, because you know that it had never been opened. But unfortunately, early on, that was the case for me, too. I came here and thinking, just by osmosis, I get it. And the great thing about being motivated by having somebody reach out and say, no, come this way. You've got to solve problems. Because the thing is about Alcoholics Anonymous is what I have realized is that Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're new and if you're finding like trouble with higher power and God and all that stuff, let me just tell you where I come from on this. I actually, you know, I looked in the dictionary this morning, the definition of self. The definition of self in the dictionary, at least in the one I looked at, was that which differentiates me from the next person. Okay? Now, another way of looking at that to me was that which separates me from the next person. In other words, for me to individuate, I'm going to be over here, you're going to be over there, I need my sense of self. However, the self, dependence on self. The book talks a lot about that. It brings to mind, what is the self I'm depending on? Now, I had a friend who was an astrologer. He used to say the ego has so much ego, it actually believes it exists. Okay. And as you find, if you stick around here, this is a program of ego deflation. And the way I translate that is everything I thought I had to be safe, okay, gets changed. And my parameters of safety get expanded because I come in here in a very small capsule, you know. I think I'm just Mr. Loose and Mellow, but the fact is this drunk was extremely rigid, okay? And all of a sudden, what was safe and what, you know, in my mind, I can't do that, I can't do this, I can't say that, I can't go here, I can't do that. I mean, all these limitations only really motivated by safety. I didn't feel safe stepping outside of my comfort zone. That's why they invented a higher power. That's why they invented a God. Because the fact is, to me, if you're in this room right now, you've done A, B, and C. You've done the first three steps. You said, I can't do it. I need help. Maybe they can. And then you decide that this is a power greater than yourself. Right? The self, the construct, the thing we think we need to be safe. That's all that's about, in my experience. You can put all kinds of religious and spiritual connotations on it. And as a longtime meditator, truly, I think I'm here a lot because of that, I can tell you that my experience with a spiritual life, I have a very strong one. I don't want to go into detail, but I jokingly told Stephanie that when she called me at the last minute to speak, that I would have to turn down an exorcism I was attending to be here. Actually, that wasn't that far from the truth. But that's only because of who I discovered I am. I'm not an exorcist. But I do believe that there is such a thing as restless spirits. I do believe that there is such a thing as self that gets stuck here. And the rest of us moves on. But that self is what is earthbound. That self is what we make here. And that's what gets expanded over the course of working the steps and staying sober. Right? So if you've done A, B, and C, then what you're left with is nothing. I worked with a therapist one time who said he loved to work with alcoholics because they had no defense mechanisms against the world except alcohol. And so once they stopped that, they were raw. And they were great because other people, you know, people who are not alcoholic, develop all these kind of neuroses, you know, stimulus and an odd kind of response to deal with things that are uncomfortable. we just go and freak out. You know, they used to say that alcoholics are the only people who get a flat tire and called suicide prevention, right? Obviously, a few can identify with that. Well, the truth of the matter is that the urgency with which I feel my feelings are also alcoholic in my experience. You know, and that's what gets revealed over the course of time. And so what happens, thank you very much. I told Kirk I was going to completely avoid looking at him. However, what the heck. What happens in the fourth step, basically, is that I take a look at who I've decided I have to be safe. I take a look at what I've done, how I've behaved, the harm I may have created. Because this, so I get a look at, and I tell somebody else, I do a fifth step, so I tell somebody else what it looks like when Cale's afraid. Because all of my acting out, as I learn in those steps, is fear-based. So what's that look like? The steps do nothing for me when they're on a wall. I want to know what's the behavior look like in real life when I'm out there in the world. I called my sponsor one time, dead serious, and I said, okay, what would a person who had self-esteem do in this situation? And I was kind of being cute, but you know what? What he told me was not even anywhere near the ballpark that I was thinking in. And so old Mr. Cute got an education at that point. You know, we cannot guess a consciousness we don't have. We simply have these continuous aha experiences waking up. You can, like pregnancy, you can describe it to someone all you want, but until you've had one, you'll never know what that feels like, right? Well, sobriety is very much in the same vein in terms of you don't know until you get there what it really feels like. You know what it looks like, okay? I have a friend named Milton who says that what you get when you get here is a toolbox. And after long-term sobriety, you know, just like if you give a carpenter a toolbox, you may not like what he builds, but he better know how to use the tools after having them for a long time. And so there may be plenty of people with long-term sobriety that you have feelings about. You think, well, if I was that bad boy, whatever. The point is that you don't have to be them. This toolbox is for us. And the toolbox that I use basically looks like fourth and fifth step. What does it look like? What do I do? What do I look like when I'm afraid? How do I act out? And then the sixth step is not doing what I want to do. And the sixth step is not doing what I want to do, and then doing what I don't want to do is the seventh step, which is asking for help. In other words, I cannot have a defect in my character lifted while I've got a death grip on it. So I got to be willing to not do it. I was a thief when I got sober. They said, you want to find out what's underneath? Don't steal. Well, they were right, because then I was left with the feelings that were underneath that. So six and seven are very easy. Just don't do it, and then ask for help to get through it. And then 8 and 9 was the first time for me that I got a chance to actually not be afraid of the phone, not be afraid of, you know, who I'd run into on the street. It started to get rid of a whole lot of fear in my life. And I had to come down from Mr. Big Shot and pay people back. I ripped off a lot of people. I had to pay people back $5 at a time, $10 at a time. And I was shocked because I always treated like money like it was the last money I was ever going to make. But I discovered to my shock that the more I paid back, the more I made. Blew me away. So I kept that up, and I got clear. Now, I will say that the tenth step is continuing to actually ask for input. The tenth step really has to do with continuing to look at how I behaved that day. Not what was I thinking. I don't get in trouble for what I'm thinking. I get in trouble for what I do. The problem with alcoholics, maybe others, but certainly alcoholics, is I judge myself by what I intended to do. Well, I meant to show up. I meant to be there. I meant to show up twice in a row. You know, I meant to do a good job. I meant to whatever the thing is, show up for the family reunion. But the world judges me by what I actually do. And so I think, well, that's terribly unfair. Because, I mean, I meant to be there. That's the same as being there, right? No, it's not. Now, granted, other people do not understand that for me to show up once in a row was an effort. okay? And a habit. I mean, that scared me, all right? So to show up twice in a row was a heroic effort. Three times, my God, it was time for a day off. By Wednesday, I was planning my vacation. Well, rough adjustment to the real world. They judge me by what I do. So the 10th step is taking a look at what I do. Now, it says, in the 10th step, it talks about emotional imbalance. And basically, in the 11th step, it says the first benefit of meditation is emotional balance, which is not something I was ever accused of having prior to getting here. And as being a good AA, of course, I wound up learning how to meditate because of a girl. She said, do this, and I said, sure. And I had a remarkable personal experience. I literally stepped off the sidewalk onto the lawn of a place in Los Angeles. I had a physical sensation. I went in. I sat down. I'm a good Catholic boy from Northern California. I sat down and listened to the biggest bunch of Hindu gobbledygook I'd ever heard. Every fiber of my being is screaming, get up and run! I stayed because I'd had that feeling as I walked in. I knew I was supposed to be there. And I stayed and I learned how to sit still. I could not. I have the attention span of a hummingbird on meth. For me to sit still for any period of time was really an effort. And I went from 30 seconds to 3 hours and more without much difficulty. Now, granted, I threw in yoga. I threw in all kinds of other stuff. Now, by the way, let me just say, when I got sober, I became almost immediately bulimic and anorexic, which is really gross if you're a guy. Because I was running 100 miles a week, I was doing yoga, working out with weights every day, swimming, and then hurling. I don't suggest it as a, but it was the best I could do to solve whatever my problem was. I had this problem for a couple years, and I had to do outside work. I had to do a lot of serious therapy to find out what was gnarly in here, what that was all about. And for me, I found out that it was self-hatred based. But I can tell you, when the shame lifted, it makes me want to cry thinking about it. I'm walking into the log cabin in Los Angeles. There's a girl that must have weighed 70 pounds screaming at this guy, there aren't any men bulimics in AA. And I said, I am. It came out of my mouth before I even knew it. It was the first person I'd ever told. And in that moment, all the shame lifted. I could see how my experience could benefit others. I knew how she felt, and she knew that I knew. And all of a sudden, we were, our self wasn't quite so special. Okay? That self that separates me from her was all of a sudden gone, just like what happens right here, right now. That's why the sum of our parts is greater than the sum is greater than the total of the parts, because we're joined in a common community, a common goal, a common bond for healing. So I devoted myself to meditation. I have a practice, okay? And I've been going to the same place when I'm out there for 30 years now, at more. And I never joined, because I don't join. And but I learned. And I continue to learn. And then the 12th step is that I'm here, right? Nobody, I carry the message as I am asked to do. It's pretty much that simple. And then I really try to just simply behave my steps. I don't tell anybody my steps. I don't, I'm not selling anything. The book says you give him the book, if he wants to know more, you take him to a meeting, tell him your story, whatever. The point is that I'm not going to convince anybody. They say, by the way, if you're dealing with families over the holidays, I'm sure you've heard the line, alcoholism is a threefold disease, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. Okay. Well, a couple of people haven't. The fact is that what they say is that to a person who is not an alcoholic, you cannot explain enough. And to a person who is an alcoholic, no explanation is necessary. So I suggest that if you're going home for the first time like I did, not even try. Simply live your steps. Simply make an effort to behave in a different manner. And if you don't know what that looks like, reach out to somebody who does. hopefully somebody that you, a friend you made in the program, somebody that, you know, has a little experience with the steps, so that they can actually tell you, like they had to tell me, what behavior, what proper behavior would look like, what somebody would with self-esteem would do in this particular situation, and to have the humility to actually do that. I mean, it really comes down to the 12 steps are problem-solving devices for those of us who are completely clueless about how to function on Earth. Being an Earthling is not easy, okay? It's really painful sometimes. And there are times, did we just pass five? Okay, am I down to 4.5? There are times when my nerves still to this day are on the outside of my skin. And I will tell you this, that 35 plus years, I don't for a moment ever think, well, I got this much time, I shouldn't feel like this. I absolutely reserve the right to be a complete mess in Alcoholics Anonymous because this is where I go for that. I mean, think about it. Trying to look good in AA? What's that about? Right? It's myself. It's my ego. And that needs to be trashed because the way this works is I know how you feel. And if I'm separate from you, I know how I feel. I might think I know how you feel, but I'm not going to join with you. I'm not going to reach out. I'm not going to open up. It is incumbent upon me to conquer self, right? That's why a power greater than myself is so important, because the self is zip. The self, in my estimation, is totally fake. It's a construct we put together to feel safe in life, usually childhood coping mechanisms that later in life don't serve us, and we try to hold on as long as we can. And then slowly life comes in and says, okay, well, and we change. But at the time that change happens, the ego's afraid it's going to lose its job, and so it fights back. It says, no, you can't do that. Well, why not? It's important to know that the self is not a thing. It's a decision that can change. And it saved me. I mean, the ability to be flexible with myself and incorporate a world that is bigger than I thought it was is really what gave me, I think, the avenue to survive sobriety, because that's what this is all about. This is not about staying sober as much as it is about surviving being sober. Right? Surviving the lunatic that still lives up here. And, you know, the beast you feed gets stronger. If I spend too much time thinking, even now. Now, I'll tell you this. About 7 years ago, I got polio again. I had it as a kid. This time, it was worse. I was a total vegetable. I couldn't lift my head. I couldn't do it. I said to Dr. Doom, my personal doctor, am I going to die? And he said, we'll know at the autopsy. A lot of help, right? I wish he had that much humor. He proceeds to give me all this horrid news. And he left. And I had a good cry. And I thought, you know, this guy sees sick people all day long. That's his job, to tell sick people bad news. I've seen miracles every day for 28 at the time, 29 years. I'm going to believe in miracles. You're looking at a miracle at least twice over because of this program. Thanks, that's it.